Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Nintendo!
Offices in San Francisco.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of March 12th, 2015. I'm your host, Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show, the one you know and love. Thank you very much for tuning in again. And we have a full house today, three really cool people. I mean, I don't want to count myself. That's so selfish. So let's start with Per Schneider. Welcome back.
Hello, Jose.
How's it going?
Wake up, Jose.
Yeah, I haven't had coffee. Brian Altano. And Marty Sliva. Is that the official sound?
That's the official Brian Altano sound.
There's some dollar store garbage you got over there.
It's barp, barp.
Barp, barp.
Jeez. I would have expected. Bam, 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 bam. There we go. All right, cool. So our first topic for the podcast today, gentlemen, Chrono Trigger turned 20 years since the release of Chrono Trigger on the Super Famicom in Japan. Mm-hmm. It would later come over. So that was March 11th, 1995, mm-hmm. for those who needed to know. I actually owe you an apology, Marty, because I told you it was 96 in North America, and you said 95.
No,
you were right.
You were being rude.
I was not being rude. August 22nd, 1995, that game would find its way here.
Yeah.
And it was a gem of the Super Nintendo era. So let's spend some time talking about it. For context for folks, Chrono Trigger was the development sort of dream team, as it were. At the time, Square and Enix, two Japanese separate companies at the time, who both specialized in making games in Japan, making RPGs especially, decided to team up and make a game together.
It's awesome. You had Sakaguchi from the Final Fantasy side, right? Creator of great Final Fantasy games. You had Hori from the Dragon Quest side.
Yuji Hori,
And then you had the artist from Dragon Ball.
Akira Toriyama.
All three like coming together to create this game. So it was big news. I lived in Tokyo when it came out. It was big news when that came out. There were ads everywhere. They made a big deal out of the team up and the talent involved. And I stood in line for it. There was a humongous line for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like their first kiss and now they're married.
Oh,
That's kind of true.
They've been together for a long time now.
Totally.
It seems like there's always lines in Japan for things.
But, that's right. But you know what? Everybody gets their game. That's the difference between this and an Amiibo line.
Okay. Or an Amiibo line, everyone gets that. Launch line, stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right. But to round out sort of the people involved, the producer was named Kazuhiko Aoki. He's apparently the guy who legend says was responsible for putting the team together who worked on this game.
Oh, man.
Masato Kato was the sort of plot writer for this game. He worked on the Ninja Gaiden series. He was also the event planner for Final Fantasy VII, little game that maybe changed the world on PlayStation, and then Xenogears. And lastly, Yasunori Mitsuda scored the game. And the game score is phenomenal.
Yeah,
but we'll get to that.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's possibly one of the best soundtracks ever made. Every track is great.
Totally. So good. Yeah. It's testimony to that game. I have not revisited, maybe a little bit, just played a little bit, but I have not revisited the whole game since when it first came out in 95, and I remember multiple tunes.
You haven't replayed the whole thing since 95?
No, I checked it out when there was a re-release because I was trying to make my kids play it. So I've seen bits and pieces again, but I haven't played the whole game again.
Mm-hmm. God, that's one of those games I play probably every other year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've probably beat that game 10 times.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of, aside from
Earthbound, like
it's my favorite. A little bit. It'd be weird if I hated it. No, just like I played through it 8 times, but I just can't stand it. To me, that game is so fun and accessible, and you find new things every time you play it. Mm-hmm. Everything is so fast about the game. You immediately get into the cool, meaty parts of the story.
Yeah.
Obviously, Super Nintendo, there's no load times, but the battles move really quickly. They're action-based. You don't, like, flash and go to another screen like a Final Fantasy game. The camera just sort of positions itself, and then all of a sudden, the enemies roll out. You can see the enemies in the field, which I thought was a really cool thing. Like, you could choose to run away from them or try to dodge them.
And it's still a turn, like an active time battle-based.
Totally.
Game, right?
Yeah.
Turn-based, but you have to enter your commands in a certain time, like I think Final Fantasy IV introduced that concept, right?
Yep.
Same, obviously Square owned that concept and brought it to this game, but like, so unlike action adventures where you see all the characters on screen, you battle them, it was more a traditional RPG.
Totally.
But removing all these things we had all complained about at the time, right? Like, why do I go to a separate area and to battle
and
these?
Then,
so great.
And then take that to the next step with the dual tech and the triple tech.
Yeah.
Having these attacks that two people can do at once. If you wait it out and said, oh, wait, they're both ready now, activate and do an attack together. And they've mixed elemental properties. It was so cool to see that. That stuff was incredible. Like, and for a lot of the reasons you point out, too. And then in North America, especially, this is one of those games in the Super Nintendo era that, like, the localization was amazing. Like, the U.S. version of this game was localized by Ted Woolsey, known guy called Ted Woolsey, I think he's at Microsoft now these days. Or was he at some point? I don't quite remember. But
Yoshi's
Woolsey
World.
There you go. Maybe he's not. Yeah, thanks a lot. But he did a fantastic job with the localization of the game. And it's one of those few games that you don't ever think back on and go, man, that was a weird translation. Or, man, that was a strange thing.
I was part of a group of friends who all love video games, obviously. I've surrounded myself with video game fans my entire life. But this game was one of those ones where it like sort of took over – my whole group of friends, and I don't think everyone really knew why at first, because it was like, this wasn't a Final Fantasy game per se, but we were all really big on games like that at the time. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of just like, hey, the record label that we've been buying albums from has a new band, and let's go check it out. Mm-hmm. And everyone got really into it. I remember sort of being amazed at the time, and especially looking back now, it still really holds up, is that the sprite work is sort of like the apex of what it could be at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, obviously we've seen pixel art games for decades ever since, but so much of it, so much of them owe things to that game. Like, I'd never really seen things that detailed.
Yeah, and, totally.
Yeah.
It was such a, playing through it for the first time was so cool, because I wasn't paying a lot of attention to like the coverage behind it, so I didn't really realize all the weird places and characters the game took you to.
Yeah,
because when you start off, you sort of assume it's going to be this medieval thing, and then you go back even further, and it's like the Dark Ages, and you're like, oh, this is cool. And all of a sudden, you get rocketed into the future, this post-apocalyptic future, where like humans, where you can, instead of resting at an inn, you go into like the revitalizing machine where it says your HP and your MP are still recovered, but you're still hungry. Yeah.
Which I love, because it's like, and it's sort of that same school with like Earthbound and, you know, Final Fantasy II US, where you're like, you're in space all of a sudden. It's just like, I feel like a lot of, generations of, or years of RPG tropes had been happening by then. And the people making them were like, maybe this doesn't have to take place in the field with a king and a knight and stuff like that. Like, maybe we go to space, maybe we get a laser.
Or you can have that, but you could also have this and take it to space.
And I
could
love
totally
that.
Take it to prehistoric times.
Yeah. I loved how that all fit together. Yeah. And like, obviously, you know, it tips you off at the very beginning with a pendulum.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the intro
to the end
it's all about time.
And,
like, it has these little Back to the Future
references. Your character's named Chrono.
But yeah, I really loved how the story fit together. And there's, of course, we're not going to spoil it here, but there's a pivotal moment in the game that I hadn't seen done in games before.
No.
You know?
Wait, we can't talk Statue of Limitations 20 years.
I don't think we should, because I do think anyone who's listening to this who has not played it should be able to have that moment.
Yeah, right?
Or matter of fact, if you're that person, go away for the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about it.
What?
So you
what
have 5 minutes
know?
From now. Yeah, totally. Fast forward. There are buttons on your iPad.
Okay, let's say 1 minute.
No,
not 5 minutes.
3 minutes.
5 minutes.
3 minutes. All right.
All right. Go away. Come back.
Go away and come back. So Chrono dies. That was
Chrono
something like.
What?
You didn't even give them a second to go away. So go away. Come back. Chrono dies. What the hell?
What, you want 3 minutes? Yeah. You're wasting part of it.
Yeah, having your main character die and then have an entire set of quests that are pretty much to resurrect him is phenomenal. Uh-huh. That was the best.
And the way it impacts the ending of the game, because you can choose to bring him back, and if you didn't, you got a different sort of outcome because you don't bring him back.
There wasn't even enough time to cover your ears. It was half a second.
Let it go, bro.
Did you think it was for good? Because when I played it, I thought it was for good.
I thought I did something wrong.
Yeah.
I thought I could have gone back. I thought like I did something wrong in my playthrough.
No,
and that's why he died.
I was with him. I was like, this is for good. Oh my God, I can't believe it. This is nuts. And that's why when they killed off Aeris in like Final Fantasy VII, I was just like, she's dead. There's no way they're bringing her back because I was already trained by Chrono Trigger to know that.
Yeah, but it was really, other stuff too. Like just halfway through the game, sort of it turning it on its head, and it's like, no, Magus isn't the bad guy in the game. Lavos is, and being able to recruit Magus and have like Dracula on your team.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, this is rad.
That was the other really cool
And just
moment.
Fill your team up with like a frog knight and a cave woman and a robot and a nerd and a princess.
And the fanfare music was so good.
Yeah,
every time something cool happened to them. Yeah. Oh man.
Frog's theme is incredible.
Yeah. And it was especially cool to see later on. I mean, that story was so dramatic, even though, like, I don't know if I read it today, if I would love it as much as I did then. I mean, you've played it recently. Does it really hold up that
totally.
Well?
In terms of 16-bit games, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, all right, because I look at some video game stories now, and I go, I was crazy about this when I was, like, 15. I don't really care
and
anymore.
Each character has a really interesting, meaty arc that you can go into. There's that thing with Robo where you leave him 400 years in the past so that he can grow a forest. And you come back 400 years later, and, like, this massive forest has grown around him, and he's just this dead robot.
Well,
and then you, like,
tinker
overnight, and campfire and Luca brings him back. It's
and
like,
that
oh,
was the thing
incredible.
About the scenario design that I especially love. They thought about time travel and they said, okay, what happens if you put an item in the past and then you have to go to the future to get it? Or what happens if you open the treasure chest in the past but the same chest was available in the future and you'd screw yourself out of an amazing item because you didn't know, leave that alone because you're probably going to come back to this
and
exact
spot. And I
love
that you could open it in the future and then go back and get it in the chest. And in the past so you can like get the item twice.
Yep. And you can get it in the chest.
You get it in the chest.
So cool. And when that game came out, I thought for sure this is going to be a franchise that's going to be, you know, that's just going to build on the game. Well, of course, that didn't happen, right? It turned into kind of a different type of game.
Yeah, you had that radio radio drama, Radical Dreamers, that sort of helped bridge the gap between Chrono Trigger and Cross. And Chrono Cross was good. It wasn't nearly as good as Chrono Trigger.
No.
Yeah, but it was radically different.
I felt strange
from the beginning because it was kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like going from Street Fighter 2 to Street Fighter 3 where you didn't recognize anybody. Mm-hmm. It was probably even a more dramatic shift than that, but you looked at most of the roster and you're like, who are these
people?
What's happening?
It's a good thing or a bad thing that they really haven't revisited this franchise in a very long time.
I think it's a bad thing because if they, you know, I mean, it's good to see what's happening to Final Fantasy now, right?
Yeah.
Right? They're definitely going into a different direction. Imagine a game that uses time travel to this effect in more of an open world where, you know, you have the same kind of city in four different versions, like medieval, future, and stuff.
Yeah, I would love that.
So freaking cool. But you got it. It's daunting, and you got to do it right.
Is it spoilery to talk about New Game Plus? Because I think our time is up.
No,
Snake kills Dumbledore.
I don't know, man. Why don't you give them a fraction of a second to cover their ears again?
Somebody's still not over
Bruce Willis dead the whole time.
So New Game Plus and the way this game uses it. New Game Plus had existed before, right? I mean, in the original Zelda, there was a second quest. In the original Mario, there were harder enemies after you beat the game.
Is that real?
That I believe that's a thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes, all the turtles are replaced with Beetle Baileys. Or it's the Goombas, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Something about the game
which you can't kill. All they do is sit there and they spin back and forth and murder you. Yeah.
Okay. So this is different because so you have all the equipment that you finish the game with, and then it becomes a challenge of, okay, when do you want to finish the game? You can finish the game as soon as the game starts. You can finish the game after certain pivotal moments in the story, and it unlocked so many alternate endings, and it was so cool for that because it fits the whole time stream conceit.
Totally.
You know.
Yeah.
The
endings,
so rad.
And the endings range from like super melancholy and serious to just silly to talking
the developers
to the devs.
Room. Yeah, they're just hanging out. Hey, what's up? I made this game.
Yeah.
Now I want to play it again. Yep.
So for folks, a few other things. So it's a shame that this franchise didn't really continue in a lot of ways. I mean, there was Chrono Cross. There was also a re-release on PlayStation, which unfortunately was a crappy port for the most part.
Garbage.
They did introduce one thing that I think was significant, though, which was those animated cutscenes where they did hand-drawn animated versions of the work that Akira Toriyama put in. And then the DS version is actually pretty much the definitive way to play this game, although it won't look that great on your new 3DS or 3DS, like just because DS emulation, the color palette gets a little washed out unless you run it in, you know, pixel perfect mode. But the minute you do that, screen smaller and it just gets weird.
Yeah, 16-bit RPGs are awesome to play on the go. And they added a weird like dungeon thing to the DS version. It was sort of crummy, but it doesn't really matter because you don't have to do it. So.
Yeah.
So if I went and bought this on Amazon right now, I'd be able to play it on my 3DS.
You should be able to play it on your 3DS, but good luck finding a copy because I believe it's out of print, which means it's going to be – like you're going to have to buy it secondhand.
It's on Virtual Console, right?
Yeah. Virtual Console, Chrono Trigger.
For Wii, yes.
For Wii.
For Wii, not for Wii U.
Which means I have to go into Wii mode.
Wii mode.
What's that?
Yeah.
You don't have a Super NES or a Retron hooked up or something like that?
No, I have
the Japanese version still.
Yeah.
On Super Famicom.
Yeah, because you waited in line. I would have held on
That's
to
that right, man.
Too. Hell yeah, man.
But I think my daughter bit a corner out of the box.
I kind
of
wish someone at
a baby.
Just to pull us back around, I kind of wish someone at Square Enix would kind of say, hey, we should get the band back together or we should try and do this again. I mean, why not? And don't put it on mobile. Put it on a gaming, like dedicated gaming machine. But I would like to see the series again.
I think, you know, the only way this would work is if both Metal Gear and Final Fantasy work out, because I think there's definitely fear, you know, in Japan to build a game that is that big.
For the world,
not for mobile games, right? Like you have to build a game that will succeed in the West. And so with Chrono, like how many people remember it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not modern gamers probably don't know it.
Yeah.
Well, the next generation of.
Yeah.
Totally.
Sorry, I'm buying Chrono Trigger for DS right now for $23 on Amazon Prime.
Oh, nice.
So it looks they fulfill it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's very
cool.
It's so good.
You just witnessed a purchase.
Pretty, or you got to hear it.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about Chrono Trigger before we move on?
No,
but if people are sad that, you know, they can't play this game, maybe we can give them another one to play.
Oh, we can. Yeah. So why don't you talk about Segway, pats on the back. The worst.
I'm channeling Destin right now.
Yeah, you are. So why don't you tell the folks what you have for them today?
So thanks to Yuichi, who was here at our live live event who works at Konami. He's install base on Twitter, so give him a shout out. He gave us a couple of codes to give away.
Oh, nice.
For fans of the Castlevania franchise.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I'm gonna read a couple of throughout the show. All four. So Castlevania, Harmony of Dissonance, Sorrow, Moon, Dracula X. So code for each one of them. So if you are one of the early listeners, here's your code. So let's see if you can beat everybody else. It's A06PL5AF39274DWU. Good luck. Rewind that.
W.
We'll give away another one. So this is for Harmony of Dissonance. Good game.
Okay.
Enjoy.
All right. That's a really good game.
Right now,
Virtual Console Wii U.
There's a guy like pulling his car over as fast as possible that connects his 3DS to something.
And 50,000 really angry people. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. It's gone. How dare you?
Yep.
All right. So then why don't we talk about some games we've been playing then, since we're moving on from Chrono Trigger. We've reviewed Codename Steam this week. I can talk a little bit about that. I know Brian has started it. Pear played it a little bit as well.
Yes.
And most of us have played Mario Party 10. So I think we can talk about that as well.
Yet.
All right, you haven't. Okay, so then you can ask a lot of questions then to try and keep us going.
Sure, I can cover my ears with half a second.
No, there's no spoilers in Mario Party 10.
There's a party? What are you talking about?
There's actually a
Mario
party.
Mario
was invited.
All right.
Dies.
So let's start with Codename Steam. So it's reviewed on IGN, 7.9. Good game.
You
definitely
were torn.
A good game. Very, very, very torn on this game.
So I bumped into Jose in the office a couple of times, and each time he's like, what should I give it? Because really like this and this and this, but man, they make you wait for every turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds like from what I've played, I respect your opinion on this one. I think, you know, there's a lot to like in that game, but there's this one flaw that keeps it from greatness, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. We've talked about it, but alien movement is definitely one of them, right? The idea that, you know, you are waiting for the enemy's turn, which for a game like this, that is understandable. It's a turn-based game, but when the turn takes a while and you're just not seeing a lot of aliens that are way off in the distance moving, you do get this feeling that even though they're building suspense, with sound and with like creepy noises and things crawling, you are still left with, man, I just want to take my turn.
Yeah.
And there's a couple reasons for that, though, because there is a lot you can do, and the more you play, the more stuff you unlock. Like, each character has a unique thing that they can do, and you really do want to sit there and exploit and try to combine those abilities in the best way you can.
I think the times when it works are when you're standing somewhere in the level, you have no idea what's around the next corner, so you hear all the noises, and you know there's something lurking, but you don't know where. The times it doesn't work when it's like, you're like almost at the end of the level, and you're like, I know there's just one freaking little doggy alien out there.
Yeah.
And it just takes forever for that thing to complete its turn. And there really isn't a reason for it. Like, I don't know whether they artificially inflated the length, but let me just hold the R button like in the little Mii games and speed it up, you know?
Yeah, there was a report on the web that if you held the select button, it would slightly increase decrease the amount of time. Now, I don't buy it so much, though, because this is a turn-based game, and it's not moving the same. Like, every time you encounter, if you replay a map, the aliens are not moving to the same locations every time. Like, I don't know if there is a way to kind of track that. Yeah. Unless you were able to see exactly how many pieces were moving at once, I don't know if I'd buy that somewhere.
Yeah, I always like the way games like Advance Wars did it, where you would just, you'd take your turn and then you would see them and it would move super quickly.
Yeah, Fire Emblem does that too.
Yeah, totally.
And then sometimes there would be that fog of war and it would be like this cartoon cat and dog fight where you're like, you hear all this stuff going on inside and you're like, I hope they don't pop out and kill me, and then they would. I like that. Like, I noticed the same thing playing the game where I was just like, I really love how active this is for a turn-based game. I love that it pops into a like third-person shooter at times. Like, that's really smart. Like, they sped up the whole process and then they don't.
Well,
it seems very odd to take so many elements of that genre and speed them up and make them so hands-on, and then slow it to a crawl every now and then.
And then the Overwatch moments work well, too. You know,
they
when you're like,
awesome.
Oh, I know this guy's going to come around the corner, so you reserve steam. So, you know, even when it's not your turn, you're attacking the enemy when the enemy comes around the corner
and
all
you
unsuspectingly.
Can get, and you can get Overwatch, too. And what I do like is that there's no way for you to know that the enemy you're looking at is in Overwatch right now. Mm-hmm. Some people might find that annoying. I actually find that awesome because
if he is in Overwatch, because of the real-time element, so there's an action point movement system here, right, where there's a certain number of Steam units you have, and that dictates how far you can move or if you how many times you can use your weapon or if you can do both, right? Mm-hmm. So it absolutely is interesting to me, though, that when you do walk up to someone and you see the red light coming because they're in Overwatch – in a moment of Twitch gameplay, like, I had a shotgun, and this guy was getting his Overwatch on me. I was like, oh, God, pulled the trigger, took him out.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
You can take him out quickly, but you have to be fast. And there really are some cool later maps that I really liked the design and what was happening. There was one involving a boss who was sitting in the center of the room, and when he comes to life and when he doesn't, and you trying to kind of make sure he's looking the right way so you can Overwatch the ever-living you know what out of him, and then also on your turn take him down. So it was really, really good. Like, I enjoyed it a lot. Can you stop acting surprised,
what?
Please?
I want to know what you scared out of him.
Whatever. But moving forward,
the steam. He's scared the steam.
Yeah, he's scared the steam out of him. Yeah. Just saw it all come free. So that stuff's really dope. Yeah. It is really hard though. That game ramps
really
up
is.
And gets hard really fast.
I was actually really surprised about that. I was getting killed off like in mm-hmm. the you know not immediately but a few stages.
It's
in.
Okay,
I was
you
like,
can. You can admit.
Baby Elton.
Yeah, the moment
first
I started.
Level.
First guy. Mm-hmm. Just murdered me.
Yeah.
It scared the steam out of me.
I like a couple things. I like how weird the game is.
Yeah.
Like, I like that it pulls these like things from American Tall Tales and American history as its characters. I like the fact that it was announced and came out within like 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
Which we don't really get anymore. Like, it was announced the last E3 and it's already out now. That's great.
Like, I like that it's a new IP.
I love that it's a new IP.
Within like we have Codename Steam and we have Splatoon happening around the same time, and they're both brand new games for Nintendo.
Which
kind of
we don't get that often.
Sort of in new genres. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Not at all. I mean, I think that's the one thing we get upset with Nintendo is that for all the times they're familiar and wonderful and nostalgic, they're also sort of like they iterate a lot on what they do, which is fine when they have new ideas.
I do think, though, it's easy to overlook some of the IPs that they do take risks on. Like, there is Pushmo, there was Sakura Samurai. Like, these are boxed products.
Sure.
And Captain Toad as well, you know, like the spin-offs.
Yeah, a spin-off idea.
Totally. But I think this one's one of those, like, damn it, Mark. This is one of those, like,
two of them this episode.
It's like, hey, Nintendo has a new IP. Cool, what is it? It's a steampunk turn-based game where presidents fight robots.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and
with Amiibo support. Yeah. Like, it's so weird.
And what
so
I like
weird.
About the story and the art style and the presentation is that it very much follows the logic of a Saturday morning cartoon where they don't have to explain anything to you. Where Lincoln, and we mentioned this last week, but like the first time you run into Lincoln, he's like, yeah, those reports you heard were totally not true, or like something like that. Like, they don't even bother to explain, like, the whatever happened at the theater with John Wells Booth, like, not a thing, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you do notice over time, even though it is kind of tropey in terms of the characters and what they can do, or you can even say stereotypes to some degree, like, they do hang on some of that stuff. That it turns into the group Steam turns into like this multinational like group of alien hunters essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really strange, but it's fun, and there's like lots of female characters, believe it or not.
We
still can't talk about.
I really like the Saturday morning cartoon comparison. I think that totally
it reminds me of a cops like fighting crime in the future time or something
totally,
like that.
Totally.
Yeah, it's
like,
just like
Ninja
ridiculous.
Turtles, Thundercats, just like a weird group of like ragtag, and they don't even explain why they're there or why they're doing it, but. The art direction's really cool. Like, I really appreciate it. I'm like, I don't usually look to my 3DS for like cell shaded polygon style games, but like they pull it off. They figured out ways to do that. So I think it looks cool. Like, having even just like a Martha Meebo in there, like seeing that. And that cartoon art style is cool.
Yeah.
For some reason, I heard you say Martha Amiibo.
Yeah, Martha the Amiibo.
Martha Amiibo.
Yeah. Martha Stewart the Amiibo. Okay. All right. So then we have also been playing Mario Party 10, which, okay, here we go. So is it, how's the party? What's the deal? Like, is this the one? First one made by Nintendo in a very long time.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, Nintendo usually outsources or has outsourced a bunch of Mario Party games.
No more Hudson B.
Yeah, no more Hudson. Even the last 3DS one, I don't know who made it, but I know it wasn't that good.
So are you playing a pair with your kids?
Yeah, we played a little
bit.
Why don't
you lead off?
Haven't had it that long, but played with the kids. We tried the Amiibo mode, which, you know, you use basically an Amiibo to unlock it on the menu. It's locked. I've seen some complaints about that, but Mario is bundled in.
Yeah.
Right? With Mario Party, I'm sure they'll be separate releases, but so you're going to have it no matter what when you buy that standard edition.
Yeah.
That one, you seem more excited about that mode than I was, because, like, it feels a little generic. You know?
Yeah.
And I was kind of struggling with the UI, and like it doesn't do a good job at kind of explaining to you like why you would scan your amiibo until you get going. Once you get going with the game, it makes sense.
The thing they take for granted with this mode is that they kind of expect you to have in your living room sort of a coffee table. You're all gathered around the coffee table with the gamepad on that table and your amiibo. You have your controller to play and your amiibo to play.
Yep.
And does everyone have their own controller?
Everyone has their own Wii remote.
Does everyone have their own coffee
table? Everyone has their own amiibo.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I thought this was going to be a pass the gamepad kind of game because that makes it easier to scan your amiibo and stuff. It's not.
And it's
so the control, the gamepad sort of works as like the game board.
In theory.
It's stationary. Yeah. In theory.
But you still look at the TV. That's where the main action is.
It's an interaction point. Because
but you don't pick it up.
You can pass it around. We actually, in the Mario Party games I have played, we pass it around.
Because you don't have a coffee table.
No, they have a
San Francisco. 9 out of 10 people do not have coffee tables.
But you're also holding a remote.
We love our
coffee. No, but so you're holding your Wii remote. You have the gamepad on the table. You have your amiibo nearby. And you have to scan in your amiibo if you're going to use a token. If you're going to put a token in play, your amiibo can store a token, and that token can do different things. For example, if you want to roll 5 dice, or let's say you want to mess up everyone's strategy and use a warp pipe that's going to change everyone's positions on the map, things like that. So you would scan in the amiibo to the gamepad, then put it down, then take your turn, which requires you to scan the amiibo to roll the dice, and then take it off for them to spin out. Actually, you can roll the dice without touching the amiibo to it, I think. If you touch the amiibo to the gamepad, they just spin faster.
You can, and by the way, you can mix and match. Like, not everybody needs an amiibo.
So let me ask you this.
You can just borrow a character, too.
Does this take one of the already historically slowest video games in the world and slow it down even more?
It becomes more of a board game.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but like it sounds annoying. It's not quite as annoying as it sounds because
I'm interested in it, obviously.
If you treat it like a board game where like you are picking up the dice and rolling it, it's the similar kind of actions.
Sure.
It isn't as fine-tuned as I'd love it to be.
Interesting.
But it's an interesting take. I was actually expecting it to be much more kind of like the board games that use television screens as a companion.
Yep.
But it is still Mario Party where, you know, you go into a mini game and you square off. So you need your remotes still to compete.
And I will say it moves at a pretty brisk pace. Like there is scanning involved. And once you get used to having to do that, I think it just gets a little faster. But I do appreciate that Amiibo Party, even though it is a straightforward board where you're just traveling in a circle, it's way more like the original Mario Party, that there is sort of thought behind how quickly it moves. That said, it does take a while to load things. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a bit longer than I thought it should, to be honest.
Can you play with pro controllers instead of Wii remotes?
No, it's Wii remotes because some of the games require motion, so they have you using that.
Yeah. So that's my next question. How are the mini games?
I think they're okay so far. I can't say they're extraordinary. The ones that involve motion range from good to I'm not quite sure. For example, there's one where you're balancing on top of a ball and you're playing soccer and you have to like rotate the Wii remote in order to move back and forth.
Why
and you
are
end up
we
like
still doing that? Why do they still
like
make
this?
Us do that?
Because it would be like that mode. That game would be too easy if it was directional controls. You need that kind of.
They like, want it to be wacky.
Like you're basically balancing the Wii remote to make the ball run into different directions. So like it kind of needs that. Yeah. And that one was fun to play. I really like there's a golf one. Where have you seen that one?
You swing.
There's a golf tee, and like either a ball appears or a bomb, and like all four characters need to swing, but not swing when the bomb is there.
Yeah,
so it's
that
like
one's
really
fun.
Frantic.
Yeah.
But
you swing
they don't,
and it blows up.
They don't go full cheese ball where you're like holding the remote like a golf club. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of like flicking your
The actions are very simple. Like there's one with a volleyball bump and set. So if this was a four player game, me and Pear would be one team, you and Marty would be another team. You and I, Brian, would set the ball, so we would spike it. We would use the controller in sort of an upwards motion, and then Marty or Pear, whoever's on our respective team, would smack it down for the spike. And you basically like there are team games based like that too that are pretty okay and use motion at least in simple enough ways. But that said, you still have to have some timing, which some people don't have.
Sure. I haven't found a true kind of hit where I'd say, hey, that's a really good mini game that I could see myself playing over and over. Like some of the puzzle games in the older games where there were some really cool kind of takes on Tetris in the past. But this one, there may be some. I just haven't discovered all of them
yet. Okay, have you played Bowser Party yet?
I've played Bowser Party.
Bowser Party is totally the Pear Schneider Trollfessional
so game.
Bowser
totally
is a real troll, man.
Yeah, it's made for you, dude. Like, absolutely. So like, there's one that he's spinning a hamster wheel. And if you can stop the hamster wheel at any time, and the four characters who are inside are either running or stopping. And the reason they do that is because they don't want to hit the two hazards that are either in front or behind them.
Oh, what
and
a so, sick...
It is such a troll. It's
sick, so man.
What's the gist of Bowser Motive?
It's Bowser Party. Everybody Bowser Party. Sits in one car. It's almost like an amusement park ride, right?
Yep.
Like, everybody, all players are together in one car. They still compete against each other, but, like, you roll the dice... And you move together, and everything happens to you together. So, for example, when you look at the gamepad, there's a picture of Bowser there. There's an animated Bowser on the gamepad. You just kind of prop it up on the stand or something, and he's behind six bars. Each bar corresponds to one result on the die.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, when somebody rolls a one, one bar goes away. When somebody rolls a two, the second one goes away. And so, like, in the end, there's only one bar left. Have you seen that?
Yeah, but this is in regular Mario Party, not in Bowser Party.
Oh, I thought that was in Bowser Party.
No, that was from regular. Oh. So they both follow the same car structure.
Yeah.
But in Bowser Party, the player as Bowser is on the gamepad, and he is rolling separate dice after all four turns because his job is to catch up to them. And the second he does, you launch a Bowser minigame where it's the four players versus Bowser. That said, this continues until the end of the game. And at the end, at the castle, Bowser Jr. will come out. And if Bowser doesn't make it there, their objective is to get the star. So what Bowser can do is Bowser Jr. shows up, two enemies show up next to him. Bowser Jr. secretly gives one of them the star, and the players have to choose who has it of the three.
Oh, wow. I see. Yeah.
And that's a really – I thought that was a fun twist on the ending. Yeah. It still has that element of chance, but at least gives, like, Bowser a chance to still win the game.
And the regular mode still has that chance factor, too, where you get an award for, like, if you're the slowest player or something.
But the regular mode is still bundling everyone in a car, which I agree with you is a mistake.
Yeah.
I think that a board game where you're all working together like that way, but you're competitive, doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Have you ever played like a board game called Pandemic? Like, that makes more sense where there's a co-op element because we're all trying to save the world in this board game. Like, there are diseases and you all spread out to different parts of the world in order to help cure it. In this, you're still trying to win it all.
Yeah.
I don't see why bundling you together works.
I like the boards where you go into different directions. And I don't know, maybe they did this to speed it up, right? So it's easier to understand. You don't need to wait for any player because you're all together in the same area. Maybe that's why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do you remember, like, you could decide whether you go left or right in the old games.
Yeah.
Here, you all make that decision together effectively. I mean, whoever is at the draw gets to make that decision for everybody else. And people may say, no, don't go that way. Why are you doing that? But I do like the caged Bowser element because it builds this tension, right? Like, you know, you can pick whatever die you use. So sometimes you have a player may have only a die left that has one to three numbers on it. And like Bowser is in a cage with just the bar number one.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh my God, there's now this big risk that you're going to release him and everybody's going to get screwed.
Well, and you'll lose your stars as a result. The player did it. But what I love too is that every time you roll and you roll a number that has already been marked off of that bar, you just hear Bowser on the gamepad complaining at the sounds of like,
so it's like having turns, the fifth
he's
player.
He's like pounding on it, like, let me out. It's really cool in that respect.
It's very clever.
Because it's very clever and it feels like there was conscious effort made to make the gamepad a distraction even when you're doing everything else. Even in Bowser Party mode, when the player who's playing as Bowser, while everyone is rolling their die and taking their turn, on the gamepad is just Bowser's hand, and there are three or four dice sitting there, and he just rolls them back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it
doesn't do anything, and I don't understand why it's there, but it was definitely an aesthetic choice that they made.
Yeah, and then the trolling is great. Like, one thing, I'm not going to give away what happens, but like, if you encounter Bowser, there's a little roulette going on what he's going to inflict on you.
Yeah.
It could be like cutting everybody's stars in half. Then you compete in a mini game. The winner gets the biggest one. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there's also the opposite where like you need to lose a mini game to win, which is a really cool twist.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes it's hard to lose because like you need to bump into enemies and your friends are in the way of you actually doing that.
Yeah.
So that's really clever. Yeah. There's one thing where it says he's going to give you 10,000 stars. So one of the roulette options.
That used to be from back in the day. And then he just sort of would, like in Mario Party 1 and 2 when I used to play it. And then he would just stare at you for a second and then just jump off screen. Like, I always thought that, like,
liar.
I don't know if they thought that was funny. Like, I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. He would just sort of stand there and he'd be like, and then, like, bounce, like someone bouncing on challenge boards.
It's different here, but again, it has these fun little moments where you can tell the game has a total sense of humor. And, like, you know, just... even though a lot of the minigames were familiar, they do get tense and fun.
Yeah,
totally. Like and graphically, it definitely is a new era of Mario Party.
Looks good. A lot of call-outs to current Mario, too. Like, you see your 3D world, like Bowser Train.
Oh, cool.
See,
like,
is, like, Rosalina in the game?
Rosalina's in the game.
And other characters.
And other
characters. You have that amiibo.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't need her to play Rosalina, but you do need it to unlock her board at the start of the game. So it's funny, too, because you need an amiibo party. You need amiibo to unlock a style of board to play on, and you can actually swap out one of the it's cut into like four pieces and you can swap out the different parts. But while you play Amiibo Party, you can get a token that says, okay, you can unlock a portion of the board to be the DK portion of the board, even if you don't have a DK Amiibo. Yeah. So you really only need one Amiibo to get that mode started. And I think other players can use – do they get the cardboard cutout version? Have you noticed that?
Yeah. You get – if you only have one Amiibo, the other players can still pick that character, but cardboard.
Yeah, but you just need an Amiibo to unlock it. Strange choice, though, is that you always have to unlock the mode. It's always locked every time you start the game.
It's just to create that interaction, right, to make sure that you actually have an amiibo to play it.
Yeah.
It is a little cheesy that board pieces are behind amiibos, but like it's I just, you know, like for me, it finally gives a little bit more value to them.
I mean, it'd be cool if they had like even just if it was a very basic layout or a randomized basic layout, and then no matter what amiibo you put on it, that was just what the background is.
Yeah.
So the background is F-Zero or the background is Zelda. Not even like it doesn't impact the games. It doesn't impact like interactions. It's just like, hey, you're playing on a circle, but it's a circle inside of, you know, the Wii Fit Trainer
Mute
Studio.
City or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So cool. When you guys played amiibo mode, did you actually have like all seven amiibos out that work with it?
We didn't.
Well, some of them aren't out yet, like, you know, Wario and those guys.
Sure.
But you're talking about the six that they, like, sent over?
Yeah.
I didn't use all six. Have you?
No, we used two only.
Yeah, and I think it's only up to four players, Amiibo Party.
What's funny, by the way, and I wanted to see what would happen if you didn't have four amiibos when we were playing Amiibo. What's funny is, like, when you have the cardboard characters on the board, somebody rolls it's three dice, rolls them, it can knock the characters
over.
It's really cool, right?
Like, and
like, it interacts and stuff falls over.
On the amiibo front, the bases on the digital versions are customizable. So as you play, you unlock. For example, last night, my friend's wife unlocked a gold base for Princess Peach. Hmm. He unlocked a tire that he has his Luigi sitting on top of.
So
the base portion is customizable. I kind of wish that extended to the actual physical piece. But, I mean, I don't know what the logistics are for something like that.
Magic.
You know?
Magic. You have to use magic.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or spray paint.
But you notice the in-game models for the characters match the new Mario Party amiibo, except for, of course, Rosalina, who's not the Smash Brothers.
So Rosalina, and some other characters, they don't have that look, and so it makes you inevitably wonder, absolutely, Rosalina's. There's probably more Super Mario series amiibo on the way.
Which then makes sense, like, if the first Rosalina was a limited edition character.
I was going to throw my wallet at the camera, but I don't have it.
There'll be more.
That's because we've taken it away from you.
We need an intervention.
So, Jose, I mean, initial impressions were like it's not a reboot of Mario Party where they completely changed everything, even though they put all the characters into one car now.
I agree with you.
It still has those moments when you're playing with the CPU where you just like in Codenames Steam, you just want to say, hurry up, you know?
So that's weird because last night, even playing in Amiibo Party, you're really impatient then because Rosalina was the CPU player last night in Amiibo Party, and I swear she was moving like she had to go. Like, that was it. It was quick choices and everything. So I don't know why you're seeing that.
Let me give you an example. Like,
was this in like regular Mario Party mode? Because
it was in regular Mario Party.
Not a problem.
Yeah,
they were moving.
Because there are choices to be made, more choices to be made in that mode.
You're playing
as well.
Tokens in this one in the Amiibo Party, so I don't know.
I'll double check. Maybe I'm just impatient.
Maybe you are just impatient.
But like, it's kind of the AI on the. On the CPU players is kind of comical, right? There's like have you seen the kind of the memory game where you're fighting a boss, and in order to fight the boss, you have to pick cards?
Yes.
So they put down, like, let's say you're fighting one of the Hammer Brothers, I think, right? And they put these cards on the table that have either, you know, three attack points, two or one. fireballs that you shoot at them. And then they flip the cards over, and so all players have to remember where all the good cards are and where the crappy cards are.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is really clever. But what happens then is the boss will, like, stomp on the ground, and certain cards go away. So if you were sitting there going, like, oh, the lower three are the three cards, and then he stomps, they all go away. You're like, crap!
Yeah. yeah.
You know, like, and what yeah. happens is the CPU, when the CPU chooses a card, goes like this. It goes really slow.
I didn't see any of this. This is really interesting. On my end, it has been moving at a brisk pace, but I didn't see that minigame. Instead, I did one with a giant blooper, the squids from the Mario world, and it was underwater, and there were sort of half cards in front of the players. There are three half cards, so it could be half of a mushroom, half of a fire flower, or actually they would all match, so it would be half mushrooms or half fire flowers or whatever, and then there's this trench where the blooper is sitting, and there are inside of bubbles the other halves of other cards. So you'll see like half a Koopa shell or half a fire flower, and you have to with the pointer just grab and finish them off. And as you finish them off, finish the card off, basically complete it. So like two halves of the mushroom, rather, and then that card will come to life and attack the blooper.
Oh, nice!
Cool. Yeah,
it sounds like you guys are just making up mini games, which I love.
We're not. These are
there's
things.
A names. There's a hamster wheel, and then like there's a mushroom boy who's running after you.
There's one where you have it's 30 seconds, and Birdo has to eat a whole car.
There's this mini game where you have to take. There's this mini game where you have to take a break on the podcast. So we should take that right now. And when we come back, let's talk about some news. Stay with us. Welcome back. Jose Otero here with Brian Altano, Marty Sliva,
and Per
Schneider. I didn't want to give Altano time to look at his phone. So we are going to talk about some news today. First of all, the gold Super Mario amiibo is not delayed.
It's not delayed.
There were reports that Walmart sent out some emails saying, hey, this may not be arriving at this date. I think it's the same email I got in December regarding like the second wave of the Smash amiibo set, where it's like, hey, this shipment has been pushed back. But Walmart, in a statement to IGN, the spokesperson said, Mario amiibo fans will see gold on March 20th, 2015. Walmart.com pre-order customers may have seen an incorrect availability date in their account, and we're in the process of correcting that order information to assure fans there are no delays.
I was able to pre-order one this morning.
Well, I was going to get to that.
And that date is still stuck in April.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it still says April? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I want to ask, do you have one yet? Who's gotten one? If not, what are your chances of getting one?
So, first of all, I want to say thank you to the NVC Facebook group. Go join that group. Be active in there.
Always.
Because on the day we did NVC Live, those pre-orders went up like four times, but we were all running around scrambling all day. And I went in the group, and I never do this, but I went in there and I said, hey, if anyone got an extra one, I'll buy it off you. Or I'll send you a big care package. I'll whatever you need me to do. And a bunch of people reached out to me. So it turns out I may not need your help after all, because Per Schneider, who runs this company, ran over to me like a five-year-old, like, they're available for pre-order right now. Like, oh my God, I dropped everything. I went to Walmart.com, which I luckily was logged into already.
That is the saddest.
Yeah.
Why are you logged into Walmart?
I was logged because you never know, man. So you got to have a bullet in the chamber just in case you got to shoot.
When the Rosalina pre-order page showed up on Target, Brian Altano said on this podcast that he would refresh that page 100 times a day.
Yep.
So this is what we're dealing with. I just want to set this in context for you, because you sit by us. You hear us occasionally talk about this.
Occasionally.
It used to be worse.
Don't even.
When Series 1 and Series 2 were coming, every other day you'd hear us talk about amiibo. Lately, it's a little less.
No, we're in the phase of addiction where we're apologizing to our loved ones and seeking support.
And plus, it's the Mario Party ones, too. They're not as hot as the Smash Brothers ones. But
it's gold.
He was not exaggerating. It's exactly what happened.
It was funny.
Everybody was in a meeting.
Wait a minute.
Go.
What took you so long to send the text? Because you send the text and I'm in the meeting too.
I
go
pre-order first.
Well, wait a minute.
You got to get yours first.
Yeah. So I jump in and it's like, to receive an alert, click here. And I'm like, this sucks. And I send them back. I didn't get one. And they're like, well, we did. And I'm like, great.
That's why you don't go to meetings.
I sent it really quickly. I think they just go so fast.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. So for anyone listening who hasn't gotten one, what are their chances of getting one, you think? Like, is it?
I think there are more coming out.
Yeah.
I think check everything. every day. I think they're rolling out more and they're opening the pre-orders. Sometimes it's a fake out. It's like Bowser trolling you. Mm-hmm. Like you think you have it in your cart and then it goes.
He stares at you and just disappears. But it was like,
is that Tim Allen?
It's like this whole thing is so dumb. So I run to Walmart.com, which is like, why would I even be there? And I'm buying this gold amiibo, and then it goes, that's not your password. And it's super calm about it. It's like, I'm sorry, you forgot your password. Why don't you put it in? Uh-huh. I was like, I'm typing it in. So I get through, and then it starts pinwheeling, and it's just like, just checking out your credentials, making sure your credit card. I'm like, just buy the damn thing! Because the last 10 times someone sent me a link to that thing, it's been like, in stock. And I click, and it's like, oops, out of stock. And it's some kid, it's always like, whoopsies, couldn't find. And I'm like, I hate you.
It doesn't exist.
I'm punching the screen and stuff like that. So this is pinwheeling, and it's going through. And I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. And it's like, thanks. We'll be sending it to you soon. And I was like, yeah! And I run over to Pear, and I'm yelling and screaming.
Mine, I'm at the checkout, and goes...
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
And it goes, which address would you like to send this to? L.A. I'm like, I haven't lived in L.A. for 10 like, years.
Don't care, I'll deal with it later.
Tokyo.
I'll drive there.
All right, that's really cool. Well, I don't have it yet. I don't know if I'm going to even try anymore. Well, like, part of me is checked out.
He's been broken.
I think this is how you protect your sanity.
We also didn't talk about, and I want to keep it moving because we spend way too much time on this podcast talking about amiibo lately. I think the Super Mario series amiibo, we've seen them. So
we've
what
held
do you
them.
Think of them? We've held them.
Yeah, they're great.
For the first time. Do you think they're as good as the Smash set? Is the Smash set superior? I think the Smash set has more detail.
Totally.
In some characters more than others. Like you especially notice like the denim of Mario's jeans are just gone.
Yeah.
In the Super Mario
on
amiibo
purpose.
Series. It's an aesthetic, very deliberate decision, but it is something that you finally sort of realize the simplicity behind a Nintendo 3D model when you see the Mario amiibo as a standalone and not the Smash one, which is a lot more action.
The Mario amiibo is like if I had kids and they're like, I want amiibo. And I was like, cool, here's yours. Daddy gets the good ones up on the shelf with the LED lights above them. Like, I want the ones that somebody actually painted the shading around Mario's butt cheeks and the patterns on his clothes.
Yeah, because you know those are all handcrafted.
They're
artisanal.
All handmade.
There's no way they come from a sweatshop.
they're actually more accurate. If you look at the new Mario amiibo, the stances, poses are better. They're sturdier, definitely. Yeah. They're more kid friendly. But the eye placement is better.
Yeah,
like some of the wave one, especially like Diddy Kong. I don't know what's going on with that guy's eyes.
Yeah, he's cuckoo for Cocoa
Puffs.
He's got major lazy eye going on, and some of the other characters too. You just can't see them because they look down. So with the Mario ones, they're much more accurately painted and lined up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they lack that detail. Yeah.
They're also like,
and then
there's no texture on Bowser either. He doesn't have that same kind of
and
lizard
I don't think,
texture.
You know, sort of having less detail is necessarily bad. Like, I don't know. I've been fine so far with amiibo across the board in terms of the Smash series and even this Mario. I mean, I will admit it's less detailed, but I don't think it looks terrible.
Totally.
I think
Toad looks like you look at Toad, it looks completely fine.
Looks
it's
great.
Just because you have that comparison between the Smash and the Mario Party.
Check out Mark Ryan, who's on our Tech Fetish podcast, is a really great image gallery of all the side by sides of
on
all
IGN.
He's an actual photographer, so it looks incredible. And that really gives you a good example of size differences and sort of detail differences.
One thing I noticed between Peach and especially Bowser, is that they're sort of comically pushing the limit of how much they can fit on one of those little amiibo circles. Bowser looks like an elephant perching on a thimble. it's like a foot and a half wide, and he's like, oh, and it's like your feet are not even on that thing. You're just standing on a coin.
Yeah, I got them all, don't want to sit next to on an airplane.
I got them all lined up on a little stand, and like it's tough to get the new Bowser to fit because his hand is like in somebody else's nose. Like,
yeah.
He's that wide. He's like, brr. Like,
you got a set too?
Huh?
Damn it.
Yeah, get them all, man. They're beautiful.
That GM money. That's all it is. All right, in other amiibo news, the eShop has a listing. The listing for Splatoon on the eShop, references amiibo. So this was spotted by someone on Twitter that under the related software category, amiibo is listed, even though on the page there is no other mention of it anywhere. First of all, this is no shit like surprise to me. I'm sorry, like I have to say, like of course amiibo is going to be integrated into Splatoon. Why wouldn't it? It's selling well. My question to you guys though, what should it do? What will it do? Do you think Splatoon will get its own amiibo set with that game? I don't think it does. I just think the IP is too new for something
like
that.
I want that cat.
This
yeah,
still,
I want cat. Judd totally cat, want that cat.
Judd the cat, the judge is amazing.
He's
like,
great.
He's really cool.
He's like this really morbidly obese, lethargic cat with a bow tie made of hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want him to be laying down on the pad so that he's just like twice as wide
and
as
he's,
the,
yeah,
as
he's
the
just
little
like,
cat.
Or he's just like sleeping sadly, lynching
off
the side.
I mean, I think Nintendo's very serious about Amiibo right now, but I don't know if Splatoon fits that
I
quite
think it's
that
the t-shirt designs and stuff. I think they'll unlock, just like in Mario Kart, like the skins for the players or something.
Totally.
You know, like so Mario Kart, you had your Miis with custom outfits. I think they'll give you custom outfits because it would have been amazing if you could get all the Mario characters and everything in that game.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't work with the kind of squid mode and all that stuff. That would feel out of character.
Yeah, mechanically, I mean, watching Mario turn into an ooze and then a squid and then be like flopping around.
But
like, what does that
do that
even
in
look
Sunshine?
Like? There was an evil Mario that did it in Sunshine, but he turned into more like gobbles of paint than anything else.
Got it.
Like, I'm not entirely sure.
But a Link outfit for the characters would be really cool. Like that kind of stuff, if they integrate it, I'd really like
in
that.
In the meantime, Jose and I did a really cool video the other day on IGN where we kind of went through, Nintendo Japan has been tweeting these little mini videos of some of the weapons in the game. We actually did a rewind theater on it, and we noticed one thing I'd never caught before, which is when you kill someone in that game or drown them. I don't know what you actually do. You drown them. They make this horrible paint gurgling noise. It's like it's like it's really gross, and it's really like, funny. It's it's like it makes me want to just take out everybody in that
more
game.
Traumatizing than Pikmin drowning because that really sad already.
It does have Jose has said the same thing. It's got the same sort of Pikmin vibe to it because they die, they make a gurgling noise, and then a squid ghost flies off into space. So
man, all squids go to heaven.
Apparently they do.
I think and it, the game looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Like the more we see it, and hopefully we're going to see more about it really soon. But in terms of what Amiibo will do for it, I think the shirts and the fashion idea makes a lot of sense. I just hope that whoever was in charge of the Amiibo integration for this. There has not been a game outside of Smash that is using every figure. Hyrule Warriors does too, but I feel like the Hyrule Warriors reward, where it's just, here's a random thing, is not cool enough to me. You know, like it's, okay, here's 10,000 rupees, here's like weapon, you know what I'm talking about, like the materials you need to build weapons and things like that. I just wasn't impressed by that. Whereas if it unlocks like a whole line of fashion in Splatoon, I'll take
it.
That
would be really cool.
I'll absolutely take it.
I'm still hoping that Splatoon gets retro integrated into Smash Brothers, where you know you get one of the characters and it becomes just like Mewtwo. It becomes kind of like a new character unlocked.
Awesome.
I think it's like, still too new. I think I'd like it, but I think it's still too new for something like that.
It takes them a while to balance a character, right? Especially when it's a non-derivative, when it's like a new character rather than a returning one.
I think you bring up a good point, though, because Mewtwo is on the way and they've been quiet on all fronts as far as what else is coming to Smash Brothers. They're not saying anything. I mean, we do know certain things, right? There is that Miiverse stage that's happening. Tournaments are happening. Like, this has to be a bigger rollout plan behind all of this stuff, I'm sure. Like, we're just waiting. We're biding time until they say
and
something.
It's been quiet around Smash, right? Like, it's been pretty quiet out there. I do think that this, out of all of the games, this is the game that is just ready for add-on content, you know, that can just expand and keep on expanding. So, you know, the initial kind of comments on DLC were kind of odd to me, saying, "Oh yeah,
Sakurai,
Sakurai saying we didn't design it with DLC characters in mind." It's like, really?
Well,
like, if not that game, then
which
what
one?
Game, right?
Which,
especially with Amiibo out there.
Sure. I don't think you can blame them though, because I think at Nintendo they are very aware of the fact that the minute you talk about DLC and a game isn't really out or it just shipped, people kind of get rubbed the wrong way or feel like you could have put that in the game. Like there is that vocal minority that does sort of come out and say something.
I do appreciate as designers that they sort of capped the dream limit on Smash Brothers, because it's 50 characters and that's still not enough for people. People are like, I want Lakitu, I want Toad, I want Waluigi. Like, I want all those things too. But I also appreciate that they can say, this game is finished. Keep playing with it forever. We'll do minor tweaks here and there, but we don't need a new character all the time. I know, we're insatiable Nintendo fans.
No, but the reason, like, I would have been okay with fewer characters and more of a staged rollout. Like, you know, it's awesome when you get a lot of stuff at the same time, but you also still tire from it at the same point in time, I feel like. And like, to me, a new character or stage gives me a reason to come back. I really like that with Mario Kart.
Okay, so that's a really good point, actually. Mario I didn't think about that.
Sure, but Mario Kart's only getting it twice, spread out across like 6 months,
sure.
like or 8 months even.
I'd like that more often, but
I think they do have to kind of sit down and say, how often are we doing this stuff? Mm-hmm. But I am kind of surprised how Smash came and went, and it's a huge game, and it's very important, obviously, to their fall plans, and it was the game that launched Amiibo, and then they've just gone dark and aren't saying much, but they're probably hard at work on something, and I wouldn't be surprised. Yep. We're going to hear about it soon. Mewtwo was supposed to be a spring delivery, and it's spring, right?
I mean, it's going to be spring in a week or two.
So, Pat, back to what you were saying, I never really thought about it like that. That's actually a really good business plan. Had they launched the game with like 40 characters and 7 less stages, they could
IV drip them out.
Yeah, and then every 2 months you put out Duck Hunt.
See, that's dangerous.
Or,
like, you could, because the minute you put money on, like you try to sell that to consumers, there are some who really get turned off by that. Like they don't want to feel like they're paying for the game after they got the game, to some degree.
I don't think you have to make them all paid. I mean, if you look at like the business model for Mario Kart, which we just talked about, I mean, the value to that proposition was incredible.
I would not disagree with you
Nintendo
at all.
Does
but
free
I think,
updates and stuff like that.
Mario Kart was especially smart because they said, okay, you're either going to buy this pack, or you're getting a deal if you buy them both. But I do feel like the season pass mentality, like think about how many people are vocal against like the idea that when a game ships, they don't want to continue to pay for something. Like, I feel like shipping with that many characters wasn't a mistake. I just am curious to see what – it's not a mistake until I hear what's coming next.
So where's the balance then? Because, I mean, you want people to keep talking about the game, which obviously they're not doing anymore.
Yeah. I think they are. I just think we're not. I think there's a difference between them and us.
I think the people that were went back to Smash Melee like they always do.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, really? There is a thriving community around, I believe, Smash Brothers for Wii U. I wouldn't put that down at all. Granted, it's not Melee. I know what you're saying, but it's definitely not the reception Brawl got. That was just total disappointment.
Mewtwo is basically a freebie for people who linked both copies of the
both.
Game, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not integrate stuff like that? Like, I like the idea of, like, if you buy Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, you bought a different game, you buy Splatoon, you buy Codename Steam.
That would be such an awesome way where if you buy Splatoon, you get the Splatoon character for free, or whatever, a couple months down the road, you can pay for it.
Yeah. I think that's smart. Yeah. I do agree with Pear, though. I'm not trying to disagree with you. I do think that every time you pull DLC or an announcement or something
unfired,
it gets people talking again and gets people excited. And it does seem strange, at least to me, that in the office there's a smaller pool of people playing it. But I don't want to say that applies to everyone everywhere. I still think that game is thriving and is going well.
I think it's a very antiquated way of, like, I think that people getting angry at DLC is sort of antiquated now, because I think DLC is like it used to be a blanket negative term for just stuff that
for horse armor.
Yeah, for people nickel and diming you on stuff that was already on the disc. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think that there's like supplemental content that works as well. Like if you look at Evil Within, just got a 3.5-hour DLC this week that is a survival horror stealth game where you don't use weapons.
Yep.
Far Cry got a DLC this week where you fight on the mountains in the snow for the first time in a huge area versus a new enemy.
Oh, yeah.
And they're selling these stuff, but it's also like it's additional content to the game.
But it's not the, like, I think the negativity arises from the sense that they kept something from you, right? Like,
I agree.
Game is engineered by selling you something incomplete and then nickel and diming you. Whereas, like, if you own Smash and then 5 months later they release a character from Splatoon, that to me feels like an opportunity and like a cool thing that I would buy, rather than being annoyed saying, oh man, they left Squidbird out at launch.
Old Jimmy Squidbird. Sure.
Yeah. And that like gets me back.
That's his name, right?
It gets me back to playing Smash Brothers
just
again.
Like it did with Mario Kart.
Just like it did with Mario Kart, which I had a mini renaissance with that when that DLC came out. Mm-hmm. And I think like a lot of companies kind of ruin DLC for people, right? Like the horse armor, but I think specifically fighting games, when we think DLC for fighting games, we get scared because Capcom used to sell color palettes, like palette swaps. Like it would be like, you want purple Ryu, you know, here's, it's $3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think there's
there is a middle ground, and to be fair, I don't think Nintendo has crossed that bridge or burned that bridge with anyone, but I still think that when Smash Brothers as a series is known for shipping games with a lot of characters, I don't think the decision to have 50 on this one hurts it yet until I find out they're not doing more.
That's why I think I was hoping that Amiibo would be this package where like maybe an Amiibo would go for $20, but you get the character for Smash with the game. Like it unlocks it. Like I was hoping there would be like this tangible reward and you get the DLC so that you feel like, you know, you're not just paying for something small. Mm-hmm. Plus, it solves the issue that kids don't have credit cards and they have to ask their mom for a credit card when they're at home and mom's like, I don't want to enter it into this Wii U thingy. Whereas like at Toys R Us, they're like, Mom, this unlocks this character in the game, Skylanders.
Well, look at how it works with Codename Steam, where you're unlocking Fire Emblem characters, for example, inside of a different game made by the same developer, Intelligent Systems. But that is sort of an extension of what you're talking about. I mean, we'll see. Time's going to tell. But I think we're going to hear something soon. Like, we have to. Too long since they've said anything about Smash.
We're having all these long, like, sort of philosophical talks about DLC. Meanwhile, Nintendo's selling millions of, like, these, you know, skeleton keys, basically, in the form of Amiibo that are just, like, I think what Per says is very true. Like, if you go to the store, you buy your kid an Amiibo, and he goes home and he can use that for 7 different games. Yep. And one of them is a DLC character, and one of them is this stage or something like that. That's really cool. Adds a lot of value to it.
No, I completely agree. I only hope that in keeping that and in doing that, there are hits and misses. And I think, for example, a big miss was that Ace Combat game on 3DS. Like, that game is just not good, and it's not better with the Mario plane.
Is it not
good? You know, it's not. I didn't enjoy it.
I know we gave it.
Yeah, we have a copy by my desk. Remind me to pass that off to you. I didn't enjoy it at all.
But are you a flight guy or no?
I used to be. Okay. I love games where you can do where you can show off and do cool maneuvers, and I feel like they're on the verge of something. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, this is the same Ace Combat game you got when the 3DS shortly after the 3DS launched. The only difference is now you're unlocking a Mario plane and a Peach Bomber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing they've done for this, right?
Yeah,
this
is... there's nothing else that has been done at all. So I found that to be a huge mess. But speaking of sales, the NPD Group has released the top 10 selling games for the month of February 2015.
Hot scoops.
And this just in, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D led the month, did really well. So that list is Majora's Mask 3D at number 1, Evolve at number 2, Dying Light at number 3, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare at number 4, GTA 5 at number 5, NBA 2K15 at number 6, Dragon Ball Xenoverse at 7, Minecraft at 8, 9 was The Order 1886, followed by, in last place for the month, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on 3DS, which, you know, props to that game, like, for doing that well, I think, just because Monster Hunters have come and go, but it felt like this time there was enough of a push behind, like, trying to get people to understand what was so great about it. Last thing I want to say, and then you guys can talk about this, NPD cites Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate and The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask 3D as the main cause for a 30% boost in hardware sales for the month. Handheld hardware sales, excuse me, just to put that out there. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the availability of the new 3DS, too.
Probably helped a lot. Yeah. That helped, too. Let's not leave that out. Good point. Good
we were talking about this before we got on air. I'm really surprised Majora's Mask was number one.
Right?
Like, I think I love Majora's Mask. I think it's an incredible game, but I'm surprised a multi-platformed thing like Evolve wasn't.
I know. Well, then it's also – it's such a weird, eccentric – dark, strange Zelda game.
Yeah, but it is a 3D Zelda, and I do think people will come out to play and support a 3D Zelda. I looked at one of the things that surprised me on a list of software sales for some 3DS games. A Link Between Worlds was surprisingly low down the list to me.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Which shocked me a little bit. And then I saw Ocarina of Time. I believe I saw that, but then of course your brain pops in and says, "Well, it's Ocarina of Time. Of course, it's going to be a game that a lot of people either rebought or played again."
Mm-hmm.
But I do think people get really excited for 3D Zeldas versus the 2.5D, you know, sort of nostalgic classic thing.
But you got to think like an N64 game beat Minecraft, Call of Duty, Evolve,
a remade
GTA.
N64 game,
but an N64 game,
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's semantics. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it still doesn't diminish what is so good about
diminish.
I'm not trying to diminish. Jose, don't get me. Don't
I don't think you are.
I'm not trying to diminish. I just think it's astounding
that a remake of a 15-year-old game beat.
Yeah, but a lot of people really like that game, or at least there's been a cult quietly or even loudly talking about that game for years.
Yeah, but a remake of a 15-year-old game beat out two games that were supposed to be like, oh man, this is what next gen is about.
Evolve. Dying Light, right?
And The Order.
And the Order.
And Zelda on one console beat all of them.
There's a difference in at what date in the month the games came out.
Sure.
Right?
And the install base on 3DS is pretty high. Let's not forget that.
Don't underestimate like kind of the win the game got also from the release of the new 3DS. Yeah. Like people say, I want that, and I don't want an old 3DS game. I want one that has actually, you know, second stick or any improvement. Yeah, but it's great.
But
right?
I don't think it was single... just that, because the weekend sales for new 3DS weren't even that astounding. It was under $500,000.
Sure, yeah.
If I remember right. They don't put numbers on these things anymore. I wish they would, because then maybe we'd have a clearer picture as to why. Mm-hmm. But I also think new IPs is evolving the order. Like, those are risky usually anyway. Like, even if they are, this is the next step for games. Zelda is kind of known. It's the known quantity there.
Yeah, and
that
I think
doesn't surprise me too.
People,
too
I mean,
much.
What's happening is people who have never played that game are actually picking it up as if it was a new game. And let's not forget, when you see the graphics for that game and the kind of creepy campaign for it, it looks really good.
It's a
pretty looking game. It's not this oddball, hey, remember Ocarina of Time? Here's this game, and it's super strange. It's like, it does look like a full fledged, real big release.
Totally. Yeah, our direction was really strong. So it held up over time.
So, but
yeah, and the remake is gorgeous.
I wouldn't have called this. I mean, like,
it's
first of all, it's amazing that Call of Duty and Minecraft are still in the top 10 like that. I mean, those games
and
perform
NBA
really, really well.
Yeah.
NBA,
still there.
Great game, too. That I would not have predicted that Majora's Mask was going to be number one. I actually thought The Order would do better than that. I thought The Order would be higher. I thought for sure Evolve would be number one.
I just think it's, like, amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm not appalled by it. Mm-hmm. Pleasantly surprised that an N64 game with a new coat of paint that is single player, that is quirky and weird and strange, is beating out like an open world third person realistic or an online multiplayer first person shooter, multiple online multiplayer first person shooters.
And I mean, like, I don't watch traditional TV that much, but like, I saw a hell of a lot more advertising for Evolve and for The Order than I did for Zelda.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there were commercials for Zelda. I don't know.
Yeah, there were a bunch.
There's something just timeless and magical about Zelda, and like, I'm really interested to see how this carries over to the sales of Zelda for Wii U.
Yeah.
Because Wii U games don't historically crack the top 10. They have once a few times. Smash Brothers did.
I just think it's that perfect storm of new hardware, remade game, evangelists out there who have been singing the praises of this game for years, like, and some really good advertising behind it.
So you think this will carry over to like excitement and hype for Zelda for Wii U?
Oh, absolutely. I think Zelda is an event, like, especially new, like a 3D Zelda, like, that gets people talking, man. Like, it was the day that went up on the site at E3, that was the number one story on our site for a while. I think it was the number five game overall, because Mortal Kombat definitely was like, had a high placement up there, and Smash Brothers was up there.
I can't remember the list, but
I'd seen it, like Rainbow Six.
I feel like
But like, Zelda gets people going, man.
Majora's Mask is sort of it's like Link to the Past for the newer generation in terms of nostalgia. Like, the way they're aged. Like, we sit around an IGN in our 30s and... How old are you? I'm not even asking.
I've forgotten.
And we go, hey, you know, let's do retro articles about Zelda 1 and like the NES. And then we get constantly reminded that our demographic has not there. They're past that. They started gaming with the N64. Yeah. They started gaming with the PlayStation. So their nostalgia is a game like Majora's Mask.
That's a really good way to put it.
So I think you have a lot of new people playing it, and you have a lot of people being like, this is a classic. This is the first Zelda I ever played.
That's a great way to put it.
And then they have a chance to play it everywhere. Yeah. So it's really cool to see that.
If we're lucky, they're nostalgic for Majora's Mask, not like Battle Arena Toshinden.
Oh, yeah. We hire people all the time. They're like, I love the classics, like God of War 3. And we're like, get the hell out of here.
Get out. There's something good game. Just said. Yeah. That
great game, but I mean, come on. How old are we?
Absolutely. No, I'm curious to see on the front of Zelda Wii U what's going to happen in terms of the younger audience who's never played a Zelda. Are they going to be as excited as we are? Because for some of those kids, Angry Birds was the game. You know, like, I don't know. Like, we have all of this like nostalgia, and we absolutely love that series. But what about, like, is it going to pull in new audiences or not?
Yeah.
Like,
how really much of a bummer would it be if your first Zelda was Skyward Sword?
We can save that for another podcast. I mean, we need to save that for another podcast.
But by the way, I'm going to...
I would say that a lot of people's first Zelda is Minecraft. Like, it is it is an open world exploration game where you hit things with a sword. Yeah. And you walk around and you go in caves and you explore. Like, a lot of people's first...
At night it gets spooky and monsters
come out. Totally. And I think that, like,
that generation is the same people that are going to look at a game like Zelda for Wii U and be like, this is like this vast, cool, cartoony world I can explore. I'm totally in. I'm totally excited. Mm-hmm. So
I hope they pull those kids in. What
I want to give away some more games.
Okay,
man.
Give away one more and we're going to save the other two for another episode.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Stingy, Jose. Stingy.
You're ready to pull your car over again.
So by the way, I said A06 for the first three numbers letters before. It's A06. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's hard to tell. I think it is
A06. That is Per Schneider, the troll professional. That was totally on purpose.
So you still have a chance. Go back and put that code in.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't crash the car.
So here's the second code. It's for Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.
Love this game.
Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm.
It's great, yeah.
GBA game on Wii U.
What happened? Bring him back. A06 PL59521 4X1 BRL. And if any of those twos are Z's, you can just blame this terrible printout here. No, that should be it. So good luck. I hope you get that one. If you didn't enter the code before for Harmony of Dissonance, it was A06 PL5AF 39274DWU.
Theater of the Mind.
Yeah. Man,
and
that
was
mean.
Per Schneider's Trollfessional giveaway. That Thank you so mean. Much for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat. We are a weekly podcast on IGN, but we are not the only podcast on IGN. Marty Sleva, in fact, sits on two.
Yes.
Not one,
I was
but two.
Say you
I did all three of them this
other,
week.
Yeah, you did all
really?
Three this
yeah.
week.
Man.
So you are a regular contributor on Beyond. You are a regular contributor. You're hosting Beyond. Am I
yeah,
right?
I'm hosting Beyond with Max Scoville, and Brian is sort of a regular now. Brian's appearing a lot on it.
Stealing talent. What's up?
He's yours first and foremost.
Kidding,
don't worry.
I'm getting around.
Brian's nobody's man.
Yeah, I'm nobody's man. Nobody relies on me. I'm the guy you call on the bank job that double crosses everybody at the end.
Okay. All right, gonna
is that a
trend?
You're gonna stop having you on the show too. All right, but also Podcast Unlocked as well. An excellent Xbox show. You should definitely check that out. There's a ton of content on IGN, features, videos, you name it. Make sure you come over here. All about comics, TV, games.
We do a lot of live streams now, too. Check
live
those out.
Streams. Make sure you're checking those out. Those are
They're from
really,
1
really
to 3
good.
Pacific on, what was it, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday?
And by the way, if you love NVC and you own an Xbox One, you can actually now watch the podcast on your Xbox One.
That's
with
right.
the IGN app. I swear, someday we'll have a Wii U app. We've been pushing and pushing, and would love to be on that platform as well. But, you know, it's not that easy.
Send an email to Nintendo of America.
Ooh.
listeners.
Yeah. But I know a lot of people have multiple platforms who listen to this.
Course.
So you can watch NVC, unlike on the PlayStation app. What is that sound?
We're going to open that door and it's going to be a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Okay,
this is cool. Because it's getting really hot in here, so something must be happening outside.
This entire podcast is being recorded inside the mouth of someone, and they're getting
dental
work done. So.
All right. So lastly, you can contribute to the show by either emailing us,
send us your eels.
Send us your eels and your emails.
Mail us your live eels.
NVC@IGN.com. Lastly, you can find us on Twitter. Marty Sleva, where can they find you?
At McBiggity, 2 G's and 2 T's.
And you can find Brian Altano at
Agent Bizzle.
And you can find Per Schneider at
Peer IGN.
You can find myself, Jose_Otero, on Twitter. Thank you so much for sticking with us and listening to us once again. And we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Hi, I'm Jennifer, a founder of the Go Kid Go Network. At Go Kid Go, putting kids first is at the heart of every show that we produce. That's why we're so excited to introduce a brand new show to our network called The Search for the Silver Lining, a fantasy adventure series about a spirited young girl named Isla who time travels to the mythical land of Camelot. Look for The Search for the Silver Lining on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.